නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. So we were discussing Mahamalunke Sutta, or Mahamalunke Putta Sutta, which is explained by the Buddha to a group of monks, particularly addressing about the five lower fetters, what we call as the Oram Bhagya Sanyojana. There are altogether 10 fetters, and they are grouped into two lower fetters, Oram Bhagya Sanyojana, and the upper fetters, Uddham Bhagya Sanyojana. So the Oram Bhagya Sanyojana, the lower fetters are personality view, Sakkaya Ditti, doubt, vichikicca, Silabbata Paramasa, that is the adherence to rules and rituals, observances, strongly grasping them. And then the Kamaraga and Patiga. Kamaraga is the sensual desire, we can say. Patiga is the ill will. So these are the five fetters. And basically, this very answer is not enough. So that is Buddha's first argument when he asks what are the first five fetters. So then Venerable Mahalunkiputta answer like what we did: personality view, doubt, adherence to rules and observances, sensual desire, and the ill will. So he answered like that. But Buddha was not happy about it. And he particularly point out, even a little kid, if we consider as an infant, he doesn't have any of these, but still the latent tendency to each of these are available. So we can't, or we should not forget those potential available within the mind, even though currently, presently, they are not active. So that is the problem. So with respect to the that infant, so Buddha mentioned that there is no personality view in him right now. He doesn't have a name, he doesn't have such kind of a strong ego. But the problem is the tendency is available, latent tendency is available. He is the one in the future, growing as an adult, ultimately can have very, very strong ego. So that potential, that seed is available in his mind. So he is born with that seed. He is born with that potential that is latent. So to each and every lower fetter, so this threat is there, this danger is there. So that is why Buddha highlights this. And then we went on discussing about these five fetters in detail. And now today we have come to some end. So we are previously actually we were discussing about an worldling who is unknown to the Dhamma, who is unskillful in Dhamma, and not associating the nobles. So he is completely not skillful in the practice. So as a result of that, when there is personality view in him, when it is arisen, he doesn't know how to overcome that. He may even delight in that. He may even promote that. As a result of that, it becomes a latent tendency. Similarly, if there are doubts with respect to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, with respect to the training, all that, whenever it is arisen in the mind, he don't know that these are to be abandoned, and he doesn't know about a path for that abandoning. So what happens is he is promoting them, he dwell in them, think about them too much, and ultimately it becomes a habit, it becomes deeply rooted in his mind. It becomes a latent tendency. He is promoting those tendencies. So likewise, every time a typical person who is completely unaware of these things, whenever these fetters are arising in his mind, so basically he is promoting them. He is strengthening them, reinforcing them. But now we can talk about the other side, where Buddha mentioned, Sutavacha ko ananda ariyasavako ariyanandassavi arya dhammassa ko vido arya dhamme suvinito sappurisanam dassavi sappurisa dhammassa ko vido sappurisa dhamme suvinito. So for him, the person who is now with the Dhamma, who is a noble person, and he is frequently seeing the nobles, and he's trying to be diligent and again skillful in the practice of the nobles. Sappurisanandassavi, so the good people he is associating, and they are teaching he is trying to fulfill. So likewise, now this is a person who is aware of the teaching. Now sakkāyaditti pariyuttitena cetasā viharati na, so he is na sakkāyaditti pariyuttitena cetana cetasā viharati na sakkāyaditti paretena uppannāyaca sakkāyadittiyā nissaraṇaṁ yathā bhūtam pajānāti. Now, when personality views arising in him, so that is still possible, when it is arising in him, he is not allowing to overwhelm that. He is not allowing to grow. So basically, he know how to overcome that. He know how to let it go. Because he understood through the practice, there is no person here, there is no being here, there is no I here, me here. So there's a five. We can say aggregates are continuing due to various causes and conditions. So he has this as a deep understanding. So whenever personality will arising in him, he simply recognize it. Rather than promoting it, he simply let it go. He abandoned that. And where to keep the mind? So that also he know. He has practiced, say, Satipatthana, he has practiced Jhana or whatever it is. So he basically has known to a path how to overcome that. So as a result of that, there's a possibility the arisen sakkāyaditti, arisen personality view, now slowly without being strengthened, without being fulfilled, without being promoted, slowly start decaying, starts getting eroded. So similarly, Buddha mentioned about the other fetters as well. So basically, Buddha mentioned that slowly if we know the path, how to overcome these fetters, then definitely he can do that. Just as when there is a great tree standing possessed of heartwood, it is not possible that anyone shall cut out its heartwood without cutting through its bark and sapwood. So Buddha is giving here a simile. Whenever we want to cut heartwood, so we can't immediately go to the heartwood unless we are cutting the bark, unless we are cutting the sapwood. We have to penetrate that. We have to go through that. So likewise, Buddha mentioned, when the path is available, when he is known to that path, when he is practicing according to that path, so slowly, that heartwood, that personality view is cut off. He is going towards the arahantship, we say, and say we can consider this bark or sapwood is very much like these different fetters, and so he is cutting through them. So ultimately he is end up with the heartwood, so we can say that is the arahantship. All other barks and sapwood and all the other, say, outer sheath, so that is are the fetters. So likewise, so Buddha say now, without such a path, if someone is telling that it is possible to overcome these five fetters, so Buddha say it is not possible. So one needs to know what is the path. And then another simile is given here about the river Ganges. So Buddha mentioned when river Ganges completely fill, that means very much like to the brim. It is full of water up to the brim. Now even cross can easily drink water while being in the bank. So likewise, it's now completely filled. By that time, there's a feeble person come, a weak person come there, and he simply say that I am going to cross to the other shore without any problem. But he is unable to do it because he is quite weak, quite feeble. The other scenario is, there's another strong person similarly come to the same place, and he says, okay, I'm going to cross to the other shore, and Buddha say it is possible. The situation is here, Buddha mentioned, now when Buddha is teaching about the abandoning of sakkāyaditti, the personality view, when he is talking about the abandoning of the doubt, when he's talking about the abandoning of adherence to rules and regulations, say observances. So likewise everything, there's a person who can't do it. He's quite not yet capable of doing that, not yet enough strengthened his mind, not enough practiced, or maybe simply a worldling who has never come across a Dhamma, never has an idea to practice. Even though Buddha is teaching the abandoning of Sakkayaditti, but for that person it is not possible. He is weak. He doesn't know much about this whole Dhamma. He doesn't have deep understanding. So he is like a weak person who can't cross to the other shore by going through the large water of this Ganges. But on the other hand, Buddha mentioned, like that strong person who can actually, using his own strength, he can cross over to the other shore by crossing the river Ganges. Buddha mentioned there are people who are capable, who are with the Dhamma, who are with some strong faculties. So when Buddha is talking about these things, so they understand. They lend their eye. They eagerly listen to the Dhamma. Slowly, slowly, they start abandoning these fetters. So, there Buddha mentioned, so too, when the Dhamma is being taught to someone for the cessation of personality, if his mind does not enter into it and acquire confidence, steadiness and resolution, then he can be regarded as like the feeble person. On the other hand, when the Dhamma is being taught to someone for the cessation of personality, if his mind enters into it, acquires confidence, steadiness and resolution, then he can be regarded as like the strong man. So this is the situation. So Buddha has taught the path, but it is up to us to recognize it, up to us to practice it. It is up to us to use it so that we can also overcome these fetters. Now, what is the path? So here in this sutta, Buddha is giving a Samatha Pubbangama Vipassana method. So that means first of all we need to practice jhana, and then only one can overcome five fetters. So this is the path mentioned in this sutta. There are many other suttas which doesn't emphasize about jhana. So they are called, we can say, Vipassana Pubbangama Samatha if you like, or Yuganadha, where both Samatha and Vipassana are taken together. Vipassana Pubbangama Samatha means you have a certain amount of clarity in the mind, calmness in the mind, one-pointedness in the mind, and you are immediately or right away you start practicing Vipassana. By going through Vipassana, you are acquiring some amount of knowledge, wisdom, and the samadhi, the concentration is also sharpening. But not the jhana, not the absorptions. But here what we are talking is the Vipassana concentrations, Vipassana samadhis. And later once he attained, say Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, if he like, he can attain jhana as well. So that's a different story. In the practice of Yuganadha, what we call as Samatha and Vipassana, both are taken together, very much like parallel. So they are, sometimes he is practicing Samatha, sometimes he is practicing Vipassana, so he takes care of both. Sometimes he enters jhana, sometimes he practices complete Vipassana. So likewise, such possibilities also there. So in this particular sutta, anyway, Buddha is explaining about the first method. So that is, first one attains Samatha, jhana level, and emerge from that, and then practice Vipassana. Now here, that's an interesting point highlighted here by the Buddha. Before going to that, let's discuss how he's going to the first jhana. And what Ananda is the path, the way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters. Here with seclusion from the acquisitions, with the abandoning of unwholesome states, with a complete tranquilization of bodily inertia, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the first jhana, which is accompanied by applied and sustained thought with rupture and pressure born of seclusion. Now, so this is how one would attain the first jhana. There are five jhana factors typically highlighted there. Vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata. Vitakka is the applied mind or applied thought. Vichara is the sustained thought or examining the searching part, investigation part. And piti, the rapture, sukha, happiness, contentedness. And ekagata, the one-pointedness of the mind. Now, whenever one is practicing samatha meditation, whenever one is practicing any kind of a samadhi, first of all, one has to overcome the five hindrances. Now, again and again, when he is applying his mind to a primary object, suppose he is practicing anapanasati. So, primary object is the breath. So, again and again, he has to apply his mind to the in-breath, to the out-breath, to the in-breath, to the out-breath. So likewise, continuously, he has to do this task. So if he's doing this diligently, so that means there's a task in hand, so he has to do it, fulfill it properly. So he has no time to become lazy. Just after the in-breath, the out-breath is there. Just after the out-breath, next in-breath is there. So likewise, there's a continuity is there. He has no time to become lazy. So, this applied thought or applied mind, vitakka, is therefore counteracting laziness or sloth and torpor. So, that hindrance, tinamidda, is abandoned as a result of the strong vitakka. And then, once the mind is applied to a particular object, again and again, he is examining its detail. Say, when you apply your mind to the breath, so you are with that. You do a very, very careful attention to that. You recognize its beginning, the middle, to the end, or whether it is longer or shorter. So that kind of a very subtle level examination is there. It may even refine as you continue. At the beginning, it may be some gross kind of an examination, but later it becomes very subtle, very soft, penetrative examination. So the vichara. So when it is there, so you can't have a doubt because you know exactly, okay, this is the in-breath. You are quite sure about it. This is the out-breath. You are quite sure about it. So that assurance is completely opposite to the doubt. The nature of the doubt is that you may be kind of have a perplexity. You are not sure about this or that. You are very much like lost in a path, lost in a desert. But when you are sure about the object, at that moment, at that present moment, so there are no doubts. So the strong or proper knowing part, proper vichara, proper examination part, therefore helps to overcome doubt, vichikicca. And now you are getting successful, you are again and again, the mind is applied to the particular object, primary object, and you do the examination, that also now successful. So everything is happening somewhat favorably. So now you feel happy. Now you feel somewhat rapturous. Now you feel little joyful. So such joyful, happy mind is complete opposite to ill will. So ill will can't be available on such situation. So the ill will is abandoned as a result of that. Vyapada is not available. And when that is further continuing, now you feel comfortable, body feel lighter, mind also feel lighter. So tranquility is arising, pasaddhi is arising. As a result of that, you feel quite comfortable. You feel quite happy. So that sukha, that is when it is available, so mind doesn't want to wander here and there because internally there is satisfaction. Internally there is happiness. So when the environment is quite conducive, when the environment is really pleasant, you likes to stay there rather than abandoning that. So the body is now feeling lighter and there is no any kind of bodily discomfort, and the mind is also relaxed, contented, happy, joyful. So now there is no point of going out. Internally you are quite happy. As a result of that, restlessness and the regret, that is Uddaccha and Kukkuccha, that nivarana, hindrance is abandoned, because internally you are composed, internally you are happy. Now when such environment is somewhat persisting for some time, then slowly mind becomes concentrated. Sukhino chittan samadhiyati. So when the environment, when the body, the mind is completely happy, joyful, comfortable, then automatically, as a result of that, slowly mind concentrates. Ekaggata. So when ekaggata is there, one-pointedness is there, then sensual desire, that is the kama chanda, is not present. Because the nature of the kama chanda, sensual desire, is that you are not happy with one object, you again and again jump to another object. Kind of a pleasure principle. You can't stay with one thing, not satisfied. You go to another thing. So that is the sensual desire, kama chanda. But when the mind is completely one-pointed, you are staying with the breath by itself without getting distracted, without jumping. So that means one has the ekaggata, one-pointedness, and as a result of that, the kama chanda, the sensual desire, is abandoned. So likewise, in a way, in meditation, this is the process what we do. We are strengthening five faculties. So here we call them as five jhana factors, concentration factors. And when that is strengthened, the five hindrances are abandoned. Now, when you are able to maintain this state, if you are going through anapanasati, there is a possibility of arising what we call as the patibhaga nimitta, the counterpart sign. And that's a strong, sometimes most of the yogis experience it as a bright light. And to that, one can get absorbed. As a result of that, you become very much like one with it. Kind of a oneness is there. You get absorbed to that. And all the five jhana factors are present. Takka vichara piti sukha ekaggata. So typically it is defined as the first jhana. So all the jhana factors are present. So in the jhana practice, so one has to again and again enter to the jhana, be in that jhana or dwell in that jhana, enjoy that jhana, and later he has to come out, emerge from jhana. Again practice, again enter the jhana, stay there, and again emerge. So this has to be fairly seasoned. Entering, staying, emerging, and then reflecting. So likewise, what we call as vasita, kind of a mastering of jhana, is something that one has to do if he wants to have a thorough understanding, thorough practice, kind of a proficiency in the jhana. It's a long-term process. It's not an easy thing. It's a long-term process. One has to continue in that for a long time, so that one is capable of doing that with full confidence. So by overcoming by abandoning two jhana factors, that means vitakka and vichara, one enters the second jhana. By abandoning piti, rapture, one enters the third jhana. By abandoning sukha, happiness, and establishing oneself with equanimity, one enters the fourth jhana. And abandoning all the type of materiality, the form realm, one can get into the arupa jhana, what we call as the akasananchayatana, the boundless space. By considering boundless space is recognized through the boundless consciousness, one can enter the boundless consciousness, so that is the vijnananchayatana. And recognizing previous space is now completely empty, nothing is there because space is now recognized through consciousness. What was there is now not there, nothing there, natthikinchi. One can enter the akinchanyayatana, the nothingness. So this is how basically it's explained about the three arupa jhanas, and later one can get into the fourth arupa jhana, neva sanya nasanyayatana, neither perception nor non-perception. Now, typically through anapanasati one can't attain arupa jhana, one needs kasina practice for that. So one needs to practice kasina. So if one has acquired rupa jhana, so then he can practice kasina meditation. He can use one of his own internal part to recognize the color, for example. There are 10 kasinas, say elements kasinas are there, that means earth kasina, water kasina, air kasina, and then the fire kasina. And then the color kasinas are there, neela, pita, lohita, odata. So that the blue color, then yellow color, red color, and the white color. And then the aloka and the space, what you call as the light and the akasa. Now, these 10 kasinas are necessary if one has to attain arupa jhana. Arupa jhana is not possible to attain through anapanasati or any such kind of a thing. So, the kasinas are a must. So, accordingly, so there are 8 vimokkas in certain suttas Buddha highlighted. There's an interesting sutta called in Anguttara Nikaya. What we call it as, give me a second, I'll show that to you. Vimokka Sutta Attaka Nipata. Attime Bhikkave Vimokka Katame Atta. So let me read it. Attime Bhikkave Vimokka. So that means there are 8 kinds of emancipations. What are them? Rupi Rupani Pasati. I am Patamo Vimokko. So Buddha mentioned one can use one kasina which is within oneself. Like say for example, if one is practicing skeleton, so the skull typically is white color. So one can recognize that white color, emphasize that white color of the skull. He can extract white color from the skull, and that is the kasina he is now developing, what we call as the odata kasina, white color kasina, and using which he can attain the arupa jhana. So that is called rupi rupani pasati. So he has attained jhana using kasina with an internal basis. Now the second one is called ajjattang arupa sanyi eko bahidda rupani pasati. So internally he hasn't used a kasina, but he is using an external kasina. Say there's a color outside. Say he has a red color, maybe a flower. From that he recognizes the color, extract the color, or there may be a kasina mandala, a prepared color card or circular kind of a card from which he is recognizing the color. Now he is practicing jhana. So that is another method. Ajjattang arupa sanyi eko bahidda rupani pasati. So that is ayan dutiyo vimokko. Then subhanteva adimutto hoti ayan tatiya vimokko. That is the third one. Using the Brahma viharas, using metta, mudita, karuna, upekkha, loving kindness, mudita, altruistic joy, karuna, compassion, and upekkha, equanimity, there also you can attain the complete openness, complete freedom of the mind. So here we are calling of the vimokka. That means complete opening of the mind can happen through, particularly through kasina, when you are spreading it, complete opening of the mind can happen. There is no any boundary to the mind, complete boundless state of mind. And then that means the third method Buddha mentioned is actually consists of 4 methods. So they are the Brahma Viharas. And then Buddha mentioned about the Akasananchayatana, the boundless space, Vijnananchayatana, that is the boundless consciousness. The next one is boundless nothingness, complete nothingness. And then Nevasanya Nasanyayatana, so that is the neither perception nor non-perception. So those are the Arupa Jhanas are also there. And then ultimately the Sanya Vedaita Nirodha, what we call as cessation of feeling and perception. So these are the eight Vimokkhas mentioned. Now this is the mastery in a way. So these are different types of Jhanas and different methods of acquiring them or absorbing to them. And this skill is what highlighted as the possibility of attaining the full-fledged of Jhana. Rupa Jhana as well as the Arupa Jhana. And the last one is the cessation of feeling and perception. Now, this is a kind of a skill. This is something mastering that someone. So there may be people except the eighth one. So that is the Sanya Vedita Nirodha, except that. The other Rupa Jhana and Arupa Jhana is a possibility available in the other dispensations as well. Not only in the Buddha's dispensation, there are other people who can practice this. Now Buddha says, so what is the path to cut off five fetters? Now he is using Jhana to explain here. Now, whatever exists therein of material form, feeling, perception, formations, and consciousness, he sees those states as impermanent, as suffering, as a disease, as a tumor, as a bub, as a calamity, as an affliction, as an alien, as disintegrating, as void, as not self. Now, these are actually Katamochanandu Maggo Katama Patipada Panchanang Oram Bhagyanang Sangyojanam Pahanai. So what is the path? What is the method? One can abandon five lower fetters. Idhananda Bhikkhu Upadhi Viveka Akusalanam Dhammanam Pahana Sabaso Kaya Duttullanang Patipasadhya Vivicheva Kamehi Vivichakusale Dhammehi Savitakkan Savicharang Viveka Jampitusukam Patamajjhanang Upasampajya Viharati. So he has attained the first jhana. So yadeva tatta hoti rupa gatam, vedana gatam, sanya gatam, sankhara gatam, vinyana gatam. Now there are five aggregates they are in. Now he is in the first jhana. Now he is emerged from that. Now he can reflect the available forms, available feelings, available perceptions, available formations, and available consciousness, the state of mind, and different kinds of chetasikas, mental states, mental factors, so that all he can carefully recognize, carefully reflect. So that means he is not completely absorbed to the jhana, rather he has the knowing capacity, sato sampajano, so that knowing capacity is available with him. He is not lost in the jhana. One thing is now, sometimes when someone is with strong concentration, he doesn't have this capacity. He don't know where he is. He attained jhana and he lost there. Very much like he is locked, unable to do anything. Till the concentration weakens by itself, he can't come out of it. He is very much like locked there. Now here, in vipassana, so he can't do any vipassana while in such state. Rather, when one attains jhana, so he is maintaining some amount of mindfulness, some amount of knowing capability, then only he can reflect what is really going on. What is the type of forms available? What are the kinds of feelings available? What are the kinds of perceptions available? Sanya. And what are the kinds of formations, chetana, the volitions available? Kind of mind state or consciousness available. So this is a kind of a knowing capacity, reflective capacity. He should be able to do a type of introspection. His own mind should be able to step back and watch. So this is a skill what we are developing in Satipatthana. Whenever you are breathing, you are not absorbed that, you are step back, you like an outsider, you can watch it. When the mind is concentrated, you can still watch it. You are not a victim of concentration. You are very much like outside and you can watch the state of the mind. So that knowing capacity is available. So that is what now Buddha highlights in the Vipassana. So here Buddha mentioned, Yo yadeva tattho hoti rupagatam, vedanagatam, sanyagatam, sankharagatam, vinyanagatam. So that means whatever the kind of form, feeling, perception, formations and consciousness available, knowing. So he, te dhamme anicchato, dukkato, rogato, gandato, sallato, agato, abadato, parato, palokato, sunyato, anattato, samanupassati. Now this is how he is recognizing their true nature. Different feelings are there, different perceptions are there, and different formations are there, mental states are there. So all now he is practicing to understand their true nature. In brief, this is anicca dukkha anatta. Anicca is reflected in here as anicchato and palokato. Anicchato means that they are transient. Palokato means they are disintegrating. And then dukkha, the suffering nature, unsatisfactory nature, is explained through 6 factors. Dukkato, rogato, gandato, sallato, agato, abadato. There are 6 possibilities or 6 perspectives Buddha is giving here. Dukkato, it is suffering. Rogato, it's like a disease. Gandato, it's like a tumor. Sallato, it's like a barb. Agato, it's like a calamity. Abadato, it's like an affliction. So these are the 6 possibilities that Buddha mentioned, that here one can practice suffering nature. And then the anatta is practiced 3 ways, that is parato, sunyato, anattato. Parato means that it belongs to someone else, it's like an alien, it's kind of alienated, things are happening but it's beyond your control. And then sunyato, it's empty. There is no essence, there is nothing substantial there, there is no I, me there. Anattato, non-self. Now, these are the 3 possibilities highlighted. Now, you can see, so, when the mind is concentrated, there's a higher possibility that one get absorbed to that, one become somewhat attached to that, and even one can become somewhat cling to that. Now, in order to overcome that, such kind of a grasping, such kind of a desire, so Buddha strongly recommends here 6 ways of recognizing it as suffering. A complete deviation has to happen in his mind, because there's a higher tendency that one start enjoying jhana, forgetting about vipassana. That's a danger. So strongly there are 11 methods highlighted, anicchato, dukkato, rogato, gandato, likewise. So 11 methods are there to highlight the impermanent suffering and non-self nature. By doing that, so tehi dhamme chittam pativapeti. Now Buddha mentioned, by reflecting like this, so what happens? He turns his mind away from those states. Now he doesn't want to be in that. Rather, he can be freed. Now he is turning away from those states. That means jhana state. There are feelings, he doesn't want them. He doesn't want to enjoy that. He doesn't want to dwell in that. There are perceptions, he doesn't want to be in that. He has a kind of a dispassion towards them now. He understands it as suffering. It as non-self. It as impermanent, transient. So, tehi dhamme chittam pativapetva amataya dhatuya chittam upasangharati. So there Buddha mentioned, he turns his mind away from those states and directs it towards the deathless element. Now, without associating anything, he was in a fairly thorough concentrated state. Now, whatever available in that concentrated state, either form, perception, feelings, formations, he recognized them as impermanent suffering and non-self. Now he wants to completely free from mind, from any of these. He is turning his mind towards the unconditioned. So emphasis is given to the unconditioned. Etan santang, etan panitang, yadidang sabba sankhara samato, sabbu badi patrinisaggo, tanhakyo nirodho nibbananti. That's a kind of an emphasis, kind of a path is given, a guidance is given by the Buddha. It is peaceful. This is peaceful, this is sublime. That is the stilling of all formations, the relinquishing of all attachments, the destruction of craving, dispassion, cessation, nibbana. Now he is turning his mind. Rather than being in jhana, now he better abandon even that, let go even that, keep the mind completely unconditioned, released, in a freed state. So that is the nibbana. Now he is turning towards. Now, if he is steady, in that he attains the destruction of taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints because of that desire for the Dhamma, that delight in the Dhamma, then with the destruction of the five lower fetters, he becomes one due to reappear spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final Nibbana without ever returning from that world. This is the path, this is the way to abandoning of the five lower fetters. So there Buddha mentions, so tatta titho asavanam khayam papunati. So that means he is recognizing, overcoming the defilements, overcoming the hindrances, overcoming the asavas, the influxes, the fetters. Noche asavanam khayam papunati. If he couldn't do that, teneva dhamma ragena thayan dhamma nandiya panchannang oram bhagyanam sangojanam paikhaya. Now, while he is doing that, still some kind of an attachment is available, either to the concentrated states. So he couldn't make the mind completely unconditioned, because some kind of a sediment was available, some kind of a ingredient is available, some kind of a condition is still available. So what happened is, he is capable of overcoming five fetters, but not all. Since he was able to overcome five fetters, he may be reborn in a pure abode, and there he may attain arahantship. So this is the path Buddha mentioned here. The same path is repeated for the second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, and then the what we call akasananchayatana, boundless space, vinyananchayatana, boundless consciousness, akinchanyayatana, that is the nothingness. And once this is mentioned, now Venerable Ananda asks a very interesting question. Venerable Ananda asks, Venerable Sir, if this is the path, the way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters, then how is that some bhikkhus here are said to gain deliverance of mind, and some are said to gain deliverance by wisdom? Oops. Now, when this is asked, so that means there's a kind of a distinction among the arahants. Some are said they achieved arahantship through wisdom. Some are said they achieved arahantship by both wisdom and concentration. Here Ananda is asking, eso cha bhante maggo esa patipada panchannang oram bhagyan sanyojananang pahanaya atha kincharahi ide kacche bhikkhu cheto imuttino ekacche panya imuttino. Cheto imutti and panya imutti. So cheto imutti is the thing that I just discussed those eight vimokkas, eight kinds of emancipations are there, completely relevant to jhana practice, including four arupa jhanas, and then last is the cessation of feeling and perception. The first three are related to the rupa jhana acquired through kasina and the Brahma viharas. Now all are actually samatha meditation, and the last, except the last one, that is actually samatha plus vipassana. So that eight vimokkas are a possibility which is available as a cheta vimutti, as a freedom of deliverance of the mind, freedom of the mind, and that's a separate story. But another story is where you are cutting through the defilements, recognizing defilements, abandoning fetters, and ultimately attain the deliverance of mind through wisdom. So there are two paths that means. So now when this question is asked, so there Buddha mentioned the difference here, Ananda, is their faculties. The faculties. So what are the faculties? Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. The faith faculty, effort faculty, mindfulness, samadhi, the concentration, and ultimately the wisdom, the panya. So depending on the strength of those faculties, so their attainment become different. So accordingly, actually there are seven kinds of people or nobles are explained according to the Dhamma. They are explained in the Kitagiri Sutta, another Majjhima Nikaya Sutta called Kitagiri Sutta. There are Buddha mentioned Sattime Pigave Puggala Santo Sangvijjamano Lokasmin Katame Satta. There are seven types of people available, so they are the liberated ones. Ubhuto Bhaga Vimuttu, so he is an arahant who has both skills. So that means he has liberated to wisdom, he has liberated to emancipations as well. That means the eight vimokkas as well. So he is the full-fledged arahant. That means all the samatha attainments are also there. And he is completely overcome defilement through wisdom. So both skills are there. So he is called Ubhuto Bhaga Vimuttu. Then Panya Vimuttu. That means he is liberated through wisdom, but he doesn't have the concentration abilities. Those eight vimokkas are not with him. But he is a fully liberated arahant through wisdom. Then there is another person called Kaya Sakhi, body witness. So that means he is a noble person, not yet an arahant. He is a noble person and he has the eight vimokkas, eight emancipations, the jhanas are available with him. Then Dittipattu, he doesn't have eight vimokkas, he is a noble person and he is having the wisdom faculty as his strength. Then one is called Saddha Vimutta, one liberated by faith. That means he is also a noble person, Arya Puggala, not yet an arahant, and his main strength is the Saddha, the faith. Then there's another person called Dhammanusari, not yet a full noble person, but he is towards becoming a noble person. Is Dhammanusari. His strength is actually the wisdom. Then Saddhanusari, he is not yet a complete noble person, he is not yet a Sotapanna, but he is towards the path. Saddhanusari, his main strength is the Saddha, the faith. So likewise, seven nobles are highlighted in this Kitagiri Sutta. Now, everywhere, the difference is because of the faculties. Certain people have faith as their strong faculty. Certain people have wisdom as their strong faculty. Some other people have concentration, samadhi as their strong faculty. Accordingly, there are different combinations are possible, as mentioned in the Kitagiri Sutta. If we consider only the nobles, there are five categories are there. Explained in that Kitagiri Sutta. Saddhayamutta, Dittipatta, Kaya Sakhi, panya vimutta and ubato bhaga vimutta. So likewise, some interesting details are there, somewhat technical. And that is the end of the sutta. And I think that is enough for this Mahamalunkiputta Sutta. And with that, I conclude today's sutta teaching session. And if you have any question, now it is the time.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. If anyone has any questions, you can raise your hand or send us via the chat.
Okay, we have one question from our side. Yeah.
Sadhu, 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 Bhante. So here again, the question comes up, why would the Buddha, he's speaking to all the monks and he's saying, jhanas are the first, you need to attain the jhanas first.
Mm.
So why is he saying it that way in this sutta?
Mm.
And particularly, it's somebody's coming to him with a question, and this person has obviously seems not to have practiced because he doesn't understand the five lower fetters in full detail of how to attain them or how to destroy them. So maybe he's speaking, the Buddha, I'm trying to imagine, why would the Buddha answer this way, putting emphasis on the jhanas to this person, but in another place, in another sutta, he's speaking to somebody else and not giving the jhanas as first, as important. So I'm just trying to understand where...
I think maybe the depending on the context, depending on the crowd, the audience, maybe he's giving the instruction. Now, say for example, he doesn't talk about any of these to Venerable Bahia, for example. He didn't talk about first jhana, Bahia, Dharuchirya.
I don't know this.
Now,
he's a more higher attained.
He's the one that Ditte Dittamattang Bhavissati Sutta Sutamattang Bhavissati, that discourse was delivered to Venerable Bahir. So he was met on the way to Pindapatha, arms round. So
yes.
Buddha immediately given a gist of the Dhamma. And he attained Arahantship.
Yes.
So you can remember. Now there is no this kind of jhana practice highlighted there.
Yes.
So direct path is given completely based on the wisdom. So that's why many monks are Panyavimutta. So there are, we can discuss another time what we call, I think it's the Susima Sutta or I can't remember the exact name, I will find it out. So actually there was a doubt in certain monk and he is asking directly from the Buddha. And he recognized, okay, certain arahants are coming and declaring their arahantship to the Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
But this monk later go and inquire from them, are you able to attain jhana? Or are you able to recognize your previous births? They say, no, I can't. And he's asking, do you have the clairvoyance? No, I don't have. Do you have any other, say, psychic powers? No, I don't have. Then how are you declaring yourself as an arahant? Then they answer, Venerable, we are Panyavimutta. We are freed from wisdom.
Okay.
Yeah. Now that argument later he complained to the Buddha, Bhante, these monks are declaring themselves as arahants, but they don't have any of these psychic powers. They don't have jhanas.
Mm-hmm.
So how come it can happen? Then Buddha explained the Dhamma to him. He also became an arahant. He doesn't also have any of those skills, but he too is an arahant, Panyavimutta, free true wisdom. So likewise, what we can see, that there are certain people have both facilities, both capacities, like Venerable, say, Mahamoggallana, Venerable Sariputta. So they are exceptional characters. So they have the capacity to attain jhana as well as they are completely free through the wisdom. That's why they are called Ubato Bhaga Vimutta.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe like Venerable Anuruddha, they also are Ubato Bhaga Vimutta, where the complete mastery of jhana is available. Mm-hmm. At the same time, completely free by looking at the defilement through wisdom, so the Panyavimutta is also there. Both are coupled, both skills are there.
Yeah.
But there are many others who are Panyavimutta, completely freed, completely abandoned all the defilements, but no jhanas are available, no thorough attainments to these states are available,
yeah.
But they are two are arahants.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we need to understand the differences. So that's why Venerable Ananda's question, so why this kind of a difference? There Buddha mentioned that is because of the distinction of the faculties.
Mm-hmm.
So the five faculties are there to develop, but some people have exceptional capacity with the faith. Some are exceptional capacity with wisdom, some are with concentration.
Yeah.
So they are all are in a way taking them, but this particular either faith, either wisdom, either concentration are the leading quality,
yeah,
taking them to the liberation.
Yes.
So Ubhato Bhagava Vimutta is the the full fledged type of thing where the complete liberation has happened, so the wisdom is also there.
Yeah.
At the same time, they have the capacity to attain jhana as well.
Yes.
As the Ubhato Bhagava Vimutta.
Yes.
So therefore, but we can't say that every arahant is Ubhato Bhagava Vimutta. Many it seems to be Panya Vimutta. So they go through the path, so they recognize defilements, cut them through, and they completely overcome all 10 fetters, but through wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's interesting trying to develop our own path, because we are each individual and unique, and so I guess that gives importance to, it puts the responsibility largely on each of us.
Each of us, yes.
And to find the right teacher who you feel is seeing you correctly,
mm-hmm,
and can give you what you need.
What you need, and he needs to recognize your strengths and weaknesses.
Yes.
Isn't it? So the teacher has to recognize your strengths and weaknesses, and if he recognizes, okay, you don't have much onto the concentration and all those things, but you are a very intellectual and very intelligence factor is quite strong, very sharp.
Yeah.
You have the capacity to quickly recognize defilements, so then the path is available.
Yeah.
So we don't need to, again and again highlight that you should practice jhana, you should practice jhana. I don't think it's a waste of time, because this person has very sharp wisdom.
Yes.
He has the capacity to quickly recognize defilements.
Yeah.
Even to recognize that, he needs to have a certain amount of concentration, no argument. But if he's able to have that optimum amount of concentration, so that distinctly, clearly, he can recognize various defilements, various fetters, etc. And as a result of his sharp wisdom, he is capable of overcoming them and keep the mind freed.
Yes.
So he has the capacity to continue more and more faster,
yes,
than spending time in attaining jhana.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
And I also think that's the danger of, here's the Buddha's words.
Mm.
He's telling us,
mm-mm,
you have to attain jhana. Mm.
No, that's
so,
the thing.
So that,
no,
that's interesting. You know?
The thing is, in this sutta, he talks about this Samatha Bhubhanga Vipassana.
Yeah.
Now, in say, for example, in the Satipatthana,
yeah,
jhana is not highlighted, but the cutting off of the defilements are highlighted.
Yes.
The wisdom part is highlighted. The, anicca dukkha anatta, recognizing that is highlighted.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately the recognizing defilements, strengthening the, what you call the enlightenment factors.
Yeah.
So that is where the wisdom part is highlighted. So there is no any kind of emphasis given to the jhana there. So rather the wisdom part is fairly highlighted, that proper, not only wisdom, that the deviation from any of the state, so that you are completely unconditioned. Assume that you are going to a kind of ill will, your mind is with hate. So there also you are recognizing it as, okay, the mind is with ill will. How this ill will is arising, how this is changing, how this is passing away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even the defilements are taken for an advantage. Even the defilements are used to develop wisdom.
Yes.
So, like this, it's a kind of a rebellion type of a path, revolutionary path.
Yeah.
Even the defilements are used for own goodness, you know, to develop wisdom, kind of a penetrative wisdom. Now, ultimately, you are taken the mind to unassociation, uncondition. Anisitocha viharati nachaginchi loki upadhyati. So, highlight is given not to cling to anything in the world, not to attach to anything in the world, not to associate anything in the world.
Yes.
So, likewise, that is another path. So, likewise, different paths are there in the Buddha's teaching. So,
yes,
we can't
yes.
say that he only taught one path to attain Nibbana.
Yes.
Many possibilities are given.
Yeah.
So, depending on the people's skill,
yes.
they have to acquire, they have to navigate in their suitable path.
Mm. Yes. I was just commenting that it's a danger that we might zoom in on
one
particular sutta without a full understanding of
exactly.
all of his teachings.
Exactly.
And as well, our own practice has to be very given a lot of consideration.
Yeah.
How to, which suttas to.
Yeah. Now, say
use.
If one is practicing jhana and he has given more emphasis to jhana and he's trying to emerge from that and recognize the method what we have discussed.
Mm-hmm.
He may have kind of a bias towards that path because he's more confident in that path and he may preach that path. Another person, he doesn't have jhana, he is capable of going through satipatthana and he's quite confident in that
yes.
and he's enjoying the freedom of mind
yes.
by fulfilling that path.
Yeah.
Maybe he is more giving bias towards that particular path.
Yes.
So that depends on that individuals.
Yes.
But Buddha has given both.
Yes, it's great. I mean, but you could see how people could use it in the wrong way.
Wrong way. Mm.
Where they tell everybody,
yeah,
this
everybody.
Is the way to do it.
Mm.
And that's very narrow.
Mm.
And it's interesting to me how the Dhamma can be misused.
Mm-mm.
But
misinterpret, like kind of emphasizing.
It's like when people become, it's almost like creating your own religion based
mm-hmm.
on like the Buddha's teaching. You
mm-hmm.
take one sutta, let's mm-hmm. say, and make a religion out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very too narrow. It's not so I really appreciate the way you're giving. I think you seem to have a very broad knowledge of the Dhamma, so you're helping us to understand these suttas correctly. So thank you.
I mean, there are people who have the different skills.
Yeah.
Even though we might not have, they might have. So we need to show the path. Okay, this is what Buddha has mentioned. So if you have, you can try. No harm.
Yeah.
And if you are confident in a good path, which is the most successful path for you, maybe you are more, you know, skillful in that path. Without any doubt, he can assure that path. That's a different story.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But Buddha is the, you know, Buddha. He has come up with many, many solutions, many, many possibilities.
Yeah.
So we should not, as you said, we should not narrow it down.
Yeah.
So we have to show that, okay, different possibilities are there. It's up to you guys to recognize what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses. Accordingly, you need to choose what is good.
But it's just, it's so interesting that in this sutta, it sounds like he's saying, this is the one
mm-hmm.
way you
mm-hmm.
have to attain jhana.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still, I can see how people would say, this is it.
This
you
is
know,
it.
We have mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. do it this way.
We'll find out another sutta where Buddha is telling, okay, this is it. No point of jhana.
I would like to see that, if you could do that.
Yeah, yeah, we'll see. Okay, come back to you, Jennifer.
All right, thank you, Panti. I'd like to invite Sam for the next question.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, thank you for the detailed description of the path, which I find is fascinating and interesting. My question is, you mentioned about lower fetters. Once you overcome lower fetters, you can be born in pure abodes, and from there you can achieve Nibbana. So my question is, does it mean that that person has already overcome the Orambhagya?
Yes, yes.
Uttambhagya Sanyojanas?
No, no. Actually, there are distinctions there also. Now, we are talking about the non-written, anagami. So, there are certain types of anagamis who are actually only cut through five fetters while being in the human realm. And they are reborn into pure birds immediately after rebirth. So, they cut off the other five fetters and they are living there as an arahant. And there are others who are born to the pure birds. After some time only, they cut through the other defilements or the five fetters, and then they are living as the arahant. So likewise, there's a distinction there as well. In certain suttas, Buddha explained them. So we can't generalize that everyone immediately after rebirth they are cutting off all the five other defilements and they live as arahants. There are distinctions.
Right.
Yeah.
So the cutting off of Uddambhagya Sanyojanas are necessary to achieve arahanthood.
Definitely, right? Definitely.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
The other question I have, Bhante, is that the sutta repeatedly says the necessity to have seclusion
mm-hmm.
to achieve jhanas.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't it true that some people have in lay life has achieved jhanas or have achieved jhanas? And seclusion has not been a requirement? Am I misunderstanding something?
No, actually here the seclusion doesn't mean that bodily seclusion alone, that you abandon your family and go to a remote place and do it. Rather here assume that you have a family, but you go to your room and others are not disturbing and you have your seclusion. So likewise, the seclusion here is very much like you are able to seclude from the defilements, the five hindrances. For that, actually, at the beginning particularly, the bodily seclusion would be an added advantage because there is no others disturbing, so you are in a more conducive environment. Most important thing is that you have your own private time without others' interruptions other interruptions, yes.
So basically what you're saying is even temporary seclusion, you can achieve jhanas because jhanas are never permanent, right?
Yeah, yeah, never permanent. But the thing is, now if one has to do a mastery of jhana, maybe thorough practice is a must. Very unlikely that one engage with so many other, responsibilities and obligations and many family matters, and you have to go to the office and all these things, and then you do mastery of jhana, quite unlikely.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because when you listen to, like Ajahn Brahmavanso, he's very cheerful all the time and seems like it's very easy to achieve jhana the way he says.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's that easy to achieve jhana, right? What is your view on that?
Yeah, that's the thing. So maybe for certain people, I mean, it depends on the person also. Now, there are certain people who are quite gifted and they have their own parami, and without much of a struggle, they may be able to attain jhana. But for certain others, they need a fair amount of practice. They are with a lot of doubts, they are with a lot of, internal conflicts. So they need a lot of time to attain jhana. So therefore, it's all depends on the individuals. So what are the internal traits we have? So therefore, we can't generalize and say, can't generalize and say that everyone, it is quite easy, one can easily attain jhana. I don't think we can say like that. But on the other hand, here the important thing is not only attaining jhana. Say one can attain jhana for a few minutes and say that I have attained jhana. That is not the point highlighted here. Rather, he has to master jhana. So he has to attain various jhanas. Many methods are there. First jhana, second, third, fourth, and then arupa. and then again and again attaining the, and dwelling there for a considerable period of time, your determined period of time, and emerging from at your will and the ability to reflect what are the jhana factors available. So likewise, with respect to jhanas, there are many skills around it. So mastering jhana is that all of these. Samapajjana, samapajjana, sampajjana. So likewise, there are five jhana masteries explained in certain books, like Visuddhi Magga, etc. So it's a different subject in a way. It's a lifetime job.
Now, yeah. Venerable Pandita talks about vipassana jhana, not samatha.
Correct.
Jhana in his book on In This Very Life, right?
Yes.
So, what's the difference between that and this jhana?
Yeah. Now, in the vipassana jhana is where you have the capacity to recognize all the aspects of each and individual phenomena. Say, for example, you are recognizing, now assume that you have certain amount of concentration so that you can recognize what are the sensations available in the body. Different, assume that there is a sensation available at your knee. So you are immediately focusing your attention to there, applying your mind to that particular sensation. Vitakka is available. And you do a thorough investigation, vichara is available. Again and again when we are doing this, so you are developing this skill and you don't need much of an effort. So everything is now happening smoothly. So the piti, sukha, that is also now coming. And you are instantaneously, you are concentrated there. So the vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata is available even in that moment. So this continuous observation, investigation of various phenomena, one can say, so this is the first jhana with respect to the vipassana point of view. Because you are again and again applying your mind, you do the investigation, and it is not tiresome. You are in a joyful state because you are quite used to it. Mind is happily doing it. So the piti sukha is also there and you are well concentrated. So this is the first jhana. So likewise, he is properly giving the explanation for four jhanas, first, second, third, fourth, with respect to vipassana.
So it means, it seems to me like when you achieve vipassana jhana, you still go through the samatha jhanas as well?
Now that's the thing, that's a quite different thing is, now in the samatha jhana, they are talking of complete absorptions for a long time. You become oneness with one type of an object for a long time, so that is as a separate skill. But here, what we are talking in vipassana jhana are changing objects. They are instantaneous objects. So you need to have an instantaneous concentration, what we call as kanika samadhi.
Kanika samadhi talks about that all the time.
Yeah, momentary concentration. So again and again, different phenomena are arising. You have the capacity to quickly focus your mind to that particular phenomena and quickly focus on that. Instantaneously, mind is concentrated onto that new phenomena.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I'm getting it a little bit.
Right.
thank you, Bob. Thank you for the clarification.
Okay.
Great, thank you. I'd like to invite Radhika for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes.
My connection is very weak and I might lose you, but it's not that I'm cutting it off, it's just that I have problems with my internet often.
Mm-hmm.
I must say that I really enjoyed your talk. It's very, very relevant for me because I feel, and I don't know too much about myself, but I feel that I'm more of a vipassana yogi than a samatha yogi. That my strength is more in the vipassana side. Now I'm doing the walking meditation and the Iriyapata Pabba, and for me it's going fairly well. I do more than 2 hours a day, 1 hour, but then I do a lot of walking in between, and I do the Iriyapata Pabba, what they call the Handi Navima. So I do the daily housework plus gardening plus swimming. So I try to fill my day as much as possible. Now, I haven't had any problems with that, but I know that you have told me, and Bhante Dhammajiva has asked me, that told me that I should include Anapanasati, but the monk Vijitananda Swaminvans is telling me not to, and I don't know if it's just for me. It is same. I asked the question personally through a friend, because it has to be in Sinhalese, that at this time, because I've already got what he calls Nirayasa, automatic mindfulness on my feet, and I'm at this point trying to expand that and make it continuous, and make it more not only Nirayasa Sati, but also to make it that I will be walking without a person, or I don't know, he put it in Sinhalese, I'm not sure how to describe it, but I'm working towards getting my Iriyapata Pabba, the mindfulness, stronger, so that I will not, I'll have effortless walking and effortless mindfulness. That the sitting right now is not a good thing for me, because when I do the sitting, I obviously have only certain number of hours in a day, and that means that I'm going to be sitting for 1 or 2 hours, sometimes 1 hour definitely. I was trying to do that, at least 1 hour. Is during that time I become very quiet very quickly. But if I'm just doing only the... So what my question is, do I have to do sitting meditation and Anapanasati if my primary meditation is Iriyapata Pabba, and the walking meditation and the movements of the body and the joints?
Yeah,
I mean, I have to do the sitting meditation also?
The thing is, if you are able to recognize all those movements merely as movements, if you are able to recognize various sensations as sensations, and you are able to clearly recognize how they are quickly arising, changing, passing away, all these things are, if you are capable, then I mean, not necessary to go to Anapanasati. It depends on you.
Yes.
But assume that you are not capable of recognizing these sensations quickly, you can't see them clearly. So then that means your faculties are not yet sharpened. You need to further focus your mind. Certain amount of concentration is further needed. Then going to Anapanasati would be useful.
Okay. So I can tell you that almost all the time I will get the sensations on the sole and the up to the ankles of my feet.
Mm-hmm.
The body sensations, all it's running down from the top to the bottom. It was very, very strong. It gets less, it gets more. Often if I'm listening to a very inspiring talk, I will have them. Today I did with you because I was really inspired. So I get concentration on the talk, then I will have it. Anytime I'm concentrated, and it's like you said, instantaneous concentration, I will get that.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are times when it is not there. So I won't say I'm fully or I'm very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But it comes and goes. The important thing he told me was that I am equanimous of it. So no longer does it bother me whether it comes or whether it goes.
Mm.
I don't try to identify the sensation, whether it's the air element, heat element anymore,
mm-hmm.
because it wasn't necessary. It was I didn't feel I had to do that.
Mm.
I know it's there. I'm aware it is there, but I don't go to try and say which of the four elements it is.
Yeah, not
I
necessary.
I can if I want to.
Not necessary. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I can see it's arising and passing away, because I don't know a word to describe it, but it's like vibrations.
Yeah.
So it's very common, because if anybody has gone to the Goenka retreats, they have trained. They train on a similar thing too.
Mm-hmm.
But this is through the walking meditation. So, mm-hmm. so it's through the feet and the body. So it's all, it can be all over, or it can come and go.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm using that coming and going to practice my equanimity. and I don't attach to it.
Yeah.
So it is a pleasant sensation, but still, if it doesn't come because he has prepared us for that, I know that it'll come sometime and it won't come sometimes.
Mm.
So it doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my thing is, I have the opportunity to practice the sitting meditation easier by going to another place whenever I'm in town.
Mm.
But like I told you, sometimes I don't
know. So there also you better practice the same thing.
I'm walking and going there. I can't walk and go there without a car in between, right? So I'm doing at least 1 hour walking, then I go in the car and then I sit.
Mm.
But the thing is that very soon my mind gets very, very calm.
Mm.
So I'm not sure if I'm falling asleep, but I think I'm falling asleep. Not all the days, but some days. So I'm a little bit nervous whether I should do that and take away from my walking time, right? Because obviously I haven't that much. I'm a fully, involved in many things as a layperson. Or if I can improve by just doing the walking and the Iriapata and try that out for maybe 6 months or something and see how I'm doing with them, getting what he's asking me to get.
Mm-hmm.
I got it at a retreat, but I can't get retreats. It's very difficult to get retreats here.
Mm.
So I did it at a retreat, and I told you one time I was walking and it was like floating. But that is only happening when I have that was a Goenka retreat, in the sense I do my own meditation. I do what he tells me to do, but during the walking time I'm practicing too. I can't do that with the household stuff. And like some days, like I was doing 5 hours. I just took off some time and I did 5 hours a day. But more than that, I cannot do like how we do at a retreat, 11 hours. I am not in a position to do that. So I don't know what I should do because I don't know enough about my own self. I don't know what I should do. I like a teacher to direct, but when I have two different teachers telling different things, and both are good. I mean, I have been coming to you longer, and it's in English, so it's easier for me to follow you.
I think you better give more emphasis to this Iriapata and walking, because it is more confident and a fair amount of wisdom can be developed, and that is also quite useful, and that will further contribute towards the wisdom. And when it is available, then even while sitting, since you have some sharp awareness, sharp knowing part, you might not fall asleep. You can recognize what's really going on.
Yes.
Are you really falling asleep, or is it in a, you know, in a drowsy state, or your mind is quite vigilant but not going here and there, completely calm, relaxed, tranquil? So that is something you yourself has to investigate. For that, what you essentially require is the knowing ability, you know, that investigative ability, the mindfulness ability. So those skills you can further sharpen while walking, while recognizing various sensations and recognizing their true behavior.
I can recognize the quality of my mind, like what it is in Dhammanupassana. I can do that.
Okay.
Most of the time.
Mm.
I can say if there's anger arisen, I can analyze and see what it resulted related to the Four Noble Truths. I can do that.
Mm.
I can say, I mean, it could be anger, but it could be desire, but it could be conceit, it can be joy. Mm. Any of that I can do.
Yeah.
I'm not saying all the times.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that all the time I can prevent it from going into words. Sometimes I do go, but very rarely, but sometimes I do. But if the mind is quiet, but I'm not into a one-hour sit, I'm just seated or just going in the car, I can recognize it. But when it's a long time only, I get into trouble.
Yeah.
When I sit for a long time only, I get drowsy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying if I'm not talking and I'm not driving, I'm just sitting still for I have got up in the night, I get a lot of sensations going down the whole body just as I get up. And at a time like that, if some thoughts come in between, I can recognize. But not all the time.
Yeah, that's the thing. So, I mean, no problem. So you can continue through the body, these sensations, and so that you are developing that skill. So later you have the capacity to recognize various thoughts, mental states, and they are also, you can see they are transient nature. So that is also another skill. So no harm.
So yes, because that is the I guess if I don't sit for one night and sit for like 10 minutes, I can do it. But if I sit for one night, I get very, very calm. So thank you very much. I think I should practice for a long time the different ways, and then I can give you a better report.
Okay. The thing is, I mean, even when the mind becomes calm, if you are not basically get absorbed to that, if you are not being lost in that, but fully aware in that, just relax, but full awareness is there, then there is no harm. Only thing is that... if mind get wander, or say if you are not aware of that, completely bewildered, or you are in drowsiness, sleepiness, then that's not that useful.
Sometimes when it happens very fast. I'm like I have lost. I feel like I have lost for 10 minutes or something. I'm aware, right? And I know, like I can hear sometimes a sound. Right, so I know I'm aware, but somebody's coughing in the medication hall, or I can hear the heater or the air conditioner suddenly going on. So I'm aware, and I can see that if the mind is calm, there isn't a lot of agitation and all that. And then suddenly, I feel there has been a blank, and then I'm aware again.
That's the thing. When you are going through meditation, there could be such blank states where there are no thoughts, no feelings, no perceptions as such. Mind become blank. But the awareness has to be available. So you are aware there is a kind of a blankness. There is an emptiness. Nothing is there to hold. Nothing. The mind is not resting. Mind is not associating anything. So that is a result of the vipassana practice. So that is also something you need to notice. You should not avoid that.
It's not that I'm not sure if I know it. Or it's because I suddenly get it back that I'm aware of things.
I understand.
I think I have fallen asleep is there is a point I can see in the mind getting calm. And I, like everything like what you said.
So I think then
I
better
feel
go
I
through
lost
it.
Some time, and then again I am at that stage where I can hear the rustling of somebody. I can hear, see things.
Better
and,
go through it.
All that.
Better go through it then. No need to avoid, because there may be a possibility, because you are now recognizing the arising and passing away nature of various phenomena, various sensations, even thoughts. Now after a while, so mind may come to a state where mind give up all things and it is resting. It is very much like secluded. So that is one result of the practice. We should not avoid that. We better go through it.
So you think it's okay if I do a longer meditation? I don't get that in, if I just, like in the morning I get up, I lie in the bed for about 15-20 minutes before I get out and I watch my mind. It's not that. This happens only if I'm at least a 1 hour sit.
No, it may continue if it is a proper thing. Now, if you are continuing your practice as usual, so currently you are capable of getting these results only in the sitting. But it will spread to the other areas as well with time.
So, should I continue with the Anapanasati at the nunnery? Or should I just give it up for a little while and test myself?
Rather than Anapanasati, while sitting also, see what are the sensations available, what are the thoughts available, what are the emotions and all these feelings available.
There you can
recognize their true nature. Then vipassana.
Right. I see what you're saying now. I understand.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Bhante.
Okay.
Teruvan Saranai.
Teruvan Saranai.
Much merit you.
Can I make just a little clarification?
Yeah, there's a small clarification from our side. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, Bhante, because I have this experience, I think, similar to what she says, is when I'm meditating and the mind becomes, it sort of zones out. But if I can stay clearly comprehending of the fact that, or this quality of mind that's arising that's sort of blank. It's the critical thing is that I stay clear at that point.
Exactly.
And observe it and keep thinking, because otherwise what happens is my mind will drift and I become sort of lost.
That's the point.
So it seems like she's saying the same thing, and I just wanted to make sure she would understand. I think is that we have to be, it's still investigating at that point.
Yeah, that the awareness should be available. We should not be completely lost. So you know the mind is not associating anything. Mind is blank, but you are aware of that.
Yeah.
If that awareness is there, you are well and good.
Yeah.
But if you completely lost and if you bewildered, then that means a complete distraction.
Right.
Or you get into a complete, drowsiness or sleepiness, where you lost completely. But here, kind of a situation, you go through various sensations, you are seeing their true nature, and all of a sudden something happened, but you are aware that's kind of a jerk happening.
Yes.
Kind of a release happening, or complete loss of the object happening, that you are aware.
Yeah.
So if it is happening, we don't need to stop that. It's a good sign.
Yes.
We're going to another level.
Yeah.
So we better continue as usual.
Yeah.
So if this is a correct thing happening, again and again it will going to happen.
Yes.
You know, it's a kind of repeatable process.
Yes.
So if the wisdom is growing, the abandoning may happen. So it's a repeating process.
Yes.
So time to time it may happen frequently, as if it is the correct thing.
Yeah. Yes, and I noticed that when I'm meditating, sitting lately, that when this happens, when the mind sort of releases, I feel this something. It's like a relaxing of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
My body also wants to relax.
Exactly.
And so what I've found is if I keep my posture really still upright, but especially upright, because I think what the body wants to do is sort of like go to sleep as well, or relax. So if that happens as well, I've noticed that if I keep my posture upright, that that helps as well.
True, exactly.
To keep the vigilance present.
Yeah. So yeah. It's a kind of a very, you know, very subtle balance we need to maintain. The body has to give its proper balance, proper support. The mind also has to go through the proper process of developing wisdom.
Yeah.
Then the, you know, the crux may happen. Then the release may happen.
Yes.
So likewise, so this everything has to be perfect.
Yes.
Because we are not yet stable in the release state.
Yes.
Therefore, better continue your path. So basically, as we are continuing, so these skills become available to us. So we have more familiarity with these things.
Yeah.
So rather than still not yet confident how to handle them, how to tackle them, still we are not confident. So that's why we are sometimes accidentally coming to these.
Yeah.
But when we are developing the path, so these skills are becoming more and more available to us and within our fingertips, then there's a higher possibility of properly maintaining it.
So we're going a little bit prepared. Also, I think realizing that this release of the mind is a bit like falling asleep or just relaxing. So, if we can stay vigilant at that point to
experience
this, this state.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Okay. I think we have spent almost 1.5 hours. Shall we wind up, Jennifer?
Yes, Bhante, we're ready.
Okay, fine. So today also we have discussed some interesting Dhamma, and most of you have participated. And with that, we were able to accumulate a fair amount of merits. We share these merits with all the celestial beings, all the past relatives, and whoever in need of merits. And we wish that these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatang punya sampadang සම්බේ බුහතා අනුමෝදන්තු සම්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා එත්තාාවතාචම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුුණ්්‍ය සම්පදං සම්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සම්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා ආකා සට්ටාචබුම්මට්ටා දේවානාගා මහිද්දිිකා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකා සට්ටාචබුම්මට්ටා දේවානාගා මහිද්දිිකා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකා සට්ටාචබුම්මට්ටා දේවානාගා මහිද්දිිකා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මං පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු